You're listening to Asbury University's Chapel Podcast, recorded live from our campus in Wilmore, Kentucky. Asbury's Chapel Service hosts speakers from around the world to inspire academic excellence and spiritual vitality. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Along with just the gratitude that it's a Friday, you'll be thrilled to know this is faculty and staff Stories Chapel. And so this is really a special time to us, along with getting to hear stories as students from each other, getting to hear stories from people that you love and are in the classroom with and that you know on campus. I'm going to start first with Dr. Catherine Wilbanks, and we're, yes, give it up for Catherine. I'm thrilled to introduce her since she sat in these seats even when I knew her as a student. She is an assistant professor in the psychology department and the equine program, a licensed professional clinical counselor in the state of Kentucky with that great specialization of incorporating horses in counseling practice. And Catherine's love for people and love for horses is only surpassed by her love for her amazing husband, Mike, and their children, Micah and Evangeline. She's also thrilled to have her parents in Wilmore, Mark and Maria Walker. And you'll hear from Dr. Wilbanks in a few minutes. I'm also grateful to introduce Joe Bruner. Wow for Joe. Over 16 years ago, we started Asbury on staff on the exact same day. And ever since, we've been two Texans hanging out. Yes, give it up. Thank you, Haven. Two Texans hanging out in the top of the Stoos, trying to be marginalized on campus. Joe is Assistant Vice President for Student Life, and he started his Res Life journey at Baylor University in Waco, which is where he met. No, you cannot cheer for that today. That's where he met his wife, Amber, and they have three kids who they love dearly, Abigail, Samuel, and Kamala. So welcome Joe Bruner to stage this morning.
All right, good to see everybody, and obviously good to see our guests. Thank you so much for being here. Hey, I wanted to start off a little bit. So a lot of y'all see me around campus and probably wondering, like, hey, did we start a football team? Like, what's that guy doing here? Is he the coach? Like, what are we doing? I'm not the football coach. As Greg said, I'm the Assistant Vice President for Student Life, which means I get to oversee our residence halls, so I get to work alongside our RDs, which are a fantastic team. I also work along Christine Endicott, who oversees our Student Center and coffee shop, as well as summer conferences and events. I also get to serve as our EC advisor, which is really a fun time, and work with our student government. Intramural sports is another thing that we do, as well as crisis management, and then also some of the student behavior and that kind of thing. So, hey, first off, so we're up here to share my story, and so I'm going to kind of come at it from a little bit of a different angle. So if some of y'all have done icebreakers before, where you do like two truths and a lie, so here we go. Two truths and a lie. All right, the first one. I'm a sucker for a good Hallmark Christmas TV show. That's the first one. Second one, I listen to Christmas music all year long. All right? And the third one, out of the 21 years my wife and I have been married, we have had someone other than our children living with us for 18 of those years. So take just a second and figure out which one of those are the lie. All right? Can't take too long, though. We're on a quick time frame. All right. So the first one, I'm a sucker for a good Hallmark Christmas show. That is true. Listen, y'all, there's nothing better than that. Come on now. Where's the Hallmark people out there? There's a few of you. I see it. Yeah, exactly. Listen, man, you cuddle up with that. You watch a little bit, unplug the brain, watch it, and then you know, the last 5 minutes, they kiss, good night, and you're good to go. The other truth, my wife and I, out of the 21 years of marriage, 18 of those years, we've had someone living with us other than our children. Whether it be family or whether it be friends, college students or those things, we've always just had a little bit of an open house and we've enjoyed that. So the one thing that is not completely true is the Christmas music. All right, I don't listen to it year round, But I am one of those where we'll turn that stuff on in October, all right? So Jeannie Banner, I know she's in here somewhere, not the biggest fan of that, but listen, I will turn that stuff on in October and just get on with it. So anyways, all right, so I've got a little bit of time. Listen, I'm not that old, but I'm not that young. And so to cover all that I have to do in about 10 minutes, I'm going to give you a brief kind of flyover of a little bit of my childhood, some hardships in life, and then talk about family. All right, and so the first thing is Greg mentioned, born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas. And so I know we have a couple people out here. Yes, praise Jesus. Born and raised there in Fort Worth, Texas, and all that that entails, being kind of proud of the state and all those things. My father and mother, so my dad was married prior to meeting my mom. He got divorced, and I have a half-sister from that marriage. And then my dad and my mom got married, and then I have an older sister, and then myself, obviously, coming from that second marriage. My dad was a little bit of an absent, when I say a little bit, he was a lot of an absentee father, probably late elementary through really the collegiate years of life. He got into drinking alcohol and really used that as like a coping mechanism for his problems. And so eventually my parents were separated and divorced, you know, somewhere around like middle school, you know, in those times. I have a little bit of like fond memories, like when I'm younger, of like our family being together, but after that, there's really not much. It's really just been my mom and my older sister, really that has been my support structure. And so that was, you know, that obviously with the childhood, like that's something that's very, you know, when you grow up with an absentee father, that is something that is very impactful, and I'll talk a little bit about that here in just a little bit. I also was not raised in a Christian home. We were the family that would go to grandma's house for Easter, for Christmas, and that's about the only time I really remember going to church. And so growing up in really a faith-based family or understanding what that meant from an early age, I just really didn't have those things. But then what I would say is that my mother really was like the stable and the supportive person in my life. And so she would work 6 to 7 days a week to try to help provide things. I was considered what you would understand as like a latchkey kid. And so that's a generation of kids that really didn't have a lot of supervision from their parents. They would come home from school, just kind of be left to their own self, and then mom would come home, and you, mom or dad would come home, and you would just kind of figure it out after that. And so, but that also wasn't a bad thing. Like, I had a lot of independence and freedom and really enjoyed those things. And to be fair, most of the time in the morning, I'd always tell my mom where I was going to be, and so she knew where I was when she came home. The other thing that's really influential as a child, sports were a really big deal for me. I played everything you could imagine and really enjoyed it. And that was where a lot of my identity came from, especially as a kid and going up through, you know, elementary to middle school to high school. And so that was kind of a little bit of the childhood. Now I want to move a little bit to like hardships. And I was in a meeting with a few people the other day. One of our staff members said, just because something is hard doesn't mean it's bad. You know, just because something is hard or difficult doesn't mean it's bad. And that's something that I've had to learn in life early on, is that oftentimes I'll learn a lot more through the difficult things in life, and that they will teach things and they will get perspective on things that oftentimes I might not have had I not gone through those things. The first thing that was really transformational in my life, on the day before I turned 16 years old, which is my sophomore year of high school, I was ready to go get my license and all of those things. I broke and dislocated my left arm doing like some sort of football drill. And eventually I ended up having to have surgery on my birthday. And then it took me a good year and a half to rehab it. And so like all of the things that I kind of thought of in terms of like being an athlete, playing football, all of those things were really kind of taken away a little bit for about a year and a half. In kind of a 1 second type deal. And that was really hard for me to kind of get through and to learn. But what I would say now is that one thing that happened back then, which I thought really was the worst thing ever, was the reason that I became a Christian, was the reason that, you know, I'm here today working, you know, where I work. And so like, I can trace a lot of those things back to that one time, which at the time I thought, man, that thing was just awful. Another thing that was also pretty impactful, you know, I'd mentioned my father being an absentee father, and there's a lot when you kind of have that, and really when you think through like the Christian life of like, hey, a father's love. Well, like I was like, well, what does that look like? Because my dad wasn't around. Like I knew kind of like my mom and kind of what that looked like, and so that was very hard for me to kind of conceptualize and understand. But here's what I would tell you is like sooner or later, like I had to come to a point where like I understood that that was my story, but I also understood like, how do I move beyond that? And like, how do I get help? And how do I get people around me that will help me transition beyond that so that it is not something that will, I'll use it as an excuse or it'll cripple me in whatever I'm trying to move forward, trying to do. But I'll also tell you like that also has a profound effect on how I parent. I do have an older daughter in here who's a freshman here, but like she would tell you as well as my other kids, like I am probably overly concerned about being present at everything my kids do. So like, I mean, I'll miss something. I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? And my daughter kind of rolls her eyes and like, dude, you're fine. Like, we're good. Like, what are you talking about? And so, but some of that is just the reality that my dad was just never there. And another thing, and it's also just an interesting thing, is like I'm constantly telling my kids that I love them and that I'm proud of them. Because those are things that, like, for me, I didn't hear a lot of. And so again, and sometimes I'll get the old eye roll, like, cause I'll tell my kids, hey, guess what? And they'll be like, what? I love you. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I love you too. Like, you know, kind of situation. But again, I would rather them grow up hearing those two things from their father so that those two things are never in doubt, that I love them and that I'm proud of them. And then another thing that was really impactful for us was my wife. So we met at Baylor, as Greg had mentioned. She was there doing her undergraduate graduate work. I was there doing my graduate work. We met, we got married. And probably about a year and a half into marriage, around one like December, like my wife just didn't feel the best. And she had had a previous surgery a couple of years ago where they had to remove her spleen. And, you know, we thought everything was fine. And then, you know, she just wasn't feeling the best. So we start going to the doctors and they kind of, you know, they kind of start looking and they go, hey, there's some sort of like mass, you know, in her stomach. And listen, man, I'm blissfully unaware of emotions at this time. I don't know what the oncologist doctor meant. Like, I'm looking all these things up going, oh, dang, that could be cancer. Like, what are they worried about? You know, so immediately we're kind of going, like, to all these places, and we're wondering, like, hey, what is going on? And so that was one of those things that, you know, honestly, when I got to my life and started thinking about marriage, like it took me a bit, and I had this kind of idyllic nature of like, man, when I get married, I had like the 50-year plus plan. I was like, I'm gonna get married, it's gonna be 50 plus years, like that's gonna be good. I did not have the 1.5 year plan on my bingo card, like if that makes sense. Like I was like, dude, listen, I'm planning on doing this for a lifetime. And so that was really sobering. And I remember she spent 17 days in the hospital, 14 of those were in ICU. And I remember so many of those days I just spent in the chapel just reading scripture, praying, and just pleading for God's mercy, you know, on her life. And the interesting part was is both my wife and I both had a strong desire to have a family and to have children. And literally right before my wife was going in to have surgery, we're meeting with this doctor who had horrible bedside manner. I mean, it was like the worst. It was like comically horrible. He talks to us and goes, hey, just so you know, like, depending on what we find, like, if it's this, then we'll have to do a hysterectomy. If it's not, well, this. And you're going, bro, seriously, right before surgery? Like, we probably could have done that, like, 2 days ago? Like, I mean, what are we doing here? And so, like, so both of us were just super nervous, super scared. Thankfully, she came out on the other side of that. And what had happened is when they removed her spleen, like there was a little bit of portion left and it just formed like a ball of infection they were able to take out. But she still had a long road to recovery and they still said, you might not be able to have kids. And that was really hard for both of us because I think both of us really wanted to have a family. And that's something we both felt called to do. And so it took us a little bit for her to get healthy, and then within about a year and a half, we were pregnant with our first child. And I'm super big into family. If you ask anybody, they'll tell you that. Like, I just really adore our family and love our family, love spending time with them, love having fun with them. And some of that is because of the things that I did not get when I was little, and that's easy to kind of see those things. But with our first child, even before we got married, I was reading in 1 Samuel 25, the story of Abigail. And as I stand here, and today, like it's just a good reflection to know the promise that God had, and I knew even before we had her that was going to be her name, and so that's been super special. So we had our daughter, and then from there, we had a couple of miscarriages. They were really hard to deal with. And those are some of the things that you kind of look through and go, man, Lord, why? Like, why do those things happen? Right? Like, it's a tendency to do that. But what I will tell you on this side of it, like, I'm able to look back at it and go, I had a sense of empathy and perspective that I wouldn't have, and it allowed me to be open to the idea of adoption. And that'll be, and that's critical here in just a second. And so we went through the miscarriages, and it's probably around Christmas time, a little bit before Christmas. And this is gonna sound really weird because I'm really not that kind of guy. Like, I'm usually a pretty logical guy. But I had a dream that we were gonna have a son, and we were gonna call him Samuel, which means God hears. And so, I told you I'm not that guy. Like, I'm usually like 1 + 1 = 2. Like, I'm not the dreams kind of guy. But really, like, it wasn't one of those things. And so at home, we always have these stockings with the kid's name on them. And so I went ahead and just got one. Unbeknownst to my wife, I just went ahead and bought one, put the name Samuel on it, and I gave it to my wife as a Christmas gift. And little did I know that Christmas, she was actually pregnant with our son, who we eventually named Samuel. And so when I see him or I see my daughter, like, they just bring a sense of comfort and a sense of, like, God's faithfulness and that he hears us. Now, not everything can end that way, and I get that, and I know that some people's story don't end that way. And then after Samuel, you can ask Greg, because we were sitting around our leadership team, and I told them, I said, y'all, I had a dream last night. We were going to have a daughter. I said, I know that sounds crazy because we already got 2 kids, but we're going to have a daughter. And I told my wife the same thing. She goes, you're crazy because I'm not going to get pregnant again. I was like, fair. And then all of a sudden we started this journey of foster care. And then we ended up adopting our youngest out of foster care. And her name is Kamila. All my kids teach me something. You know, the firstborn, like, understanding, like, the depth of love. And it changes, like, just my perspective of that. And then the second one being my son, like, it teaches me, like, a father's love. And then the third being adopted, like, it really teaches me how God's love for us when we're adopted into his family, like, it doesn't change. It doesn't change one bit. And that's how I view our youngest. And so that is a lot of life in a short amount of time. And what I would tell you is, I know I see a lot of you guys around campus, and if anything I've said, like, I could go a lot more in depth on all this, but we've got somebody else that needs to speak as well. But you're more than welcome to swing by my office anytime. If anything that I've said is something that kind of resonates with you, you have further questions. And I would also say for those students here and those students that are here visiting, that this is a very special place. I just got back from a weekend trip with some of our student government leaders. And it was just a good confirmation about how special this place is and how we equip and develop and impact and influence our students. And just how proud I was of our student government leaders with a room full of about 250 people and other college students, how they stuck out and all those things. And so I would just encourage you all that are in here to take advantage of the opportunities you have here, and that God will continue to craft your story. But hey, thank you so much. And I think we're going to welcome Catherine up here.
Well, good morning. I am very excited to be here. Also slightly nervous because I was only given 12 minutes to share a story that spans over about 150 years. You may want to, like, wait a second, I thought you were going to share your story today. And no worries, I'm not 150 years old, even though people tell me that I age very well because I look like one of you. But when I was preparing for this morning, God really impressed on my heart that he wanted me to share my story from a different angle, a different approach that highlights that my story of faith and your story of faith is bigger than just the choices that we make, the things that happen to us and the roads that we find ourselves on, but that my faith stands on the shoulders of the people that have gone before me, their faith that has influenced me, the faith in whose wake my life is taking place. So let me start my story in around 1860, when my great-great-grandfather, Johannes Kopp, was called to be a missionary in Ghana, Africa. And he was a man who loved God, and he said, "Here I am, send me." And God sent him to Africa. Now, back in the day, mission work was one that had high fatality rates. If you said yes to missions and went to mission field, there were great chances that you were never going to come back, because chances that you would die of a disease or animals or people were actually really great. But he survived the first 3 years of his mission work in Africa and was then allowed to get married. Back in the day, getting married, especially as a missionary, worked a little bit differently. So he actually proposed to his wife through his missions organization. She was, well, his future wife, she was the younger sister of one of his best friends. And she was a woman of faith who before then had said, "Here I am, send me, Lord." And God sent her to become the wife of a missionary in Africa. She went to Africa, had only met him one time when she was 13 years old, and decided, yes, we're going to get married. And they actually fell in love and had a beautiful, beautiful marriage and lived a life of faith that was so infectious that their daughter, the oldest daughter, ended up becoming a missionary in China. And she was my great-grandmother. Now, she didn't become a missionary in China because she said, "I was going to be a missionary in China." She too said, "Lord, here I am, send me." And then she read an announcement in a missions journal that said that there is a missionary, young missionary in China who is looking for a wife. Now, that was my great-grandfather. And he wasn't really looking for a wife, but his missions organization told him that he needed to have a wife. So he was like, "All right, you go find me one." So my great-grandmother answered that announcement, and they had some exchanges through mails, through letters. And that's when my great-grandmother knew this. I think he's the one. I think I'm supposed to marry him. But my great-grandfather made it clear that he was not going to come to Germany and leave the mission field to come and meet her, but that she had to come to him. Now, back in the day, there was no direct route between Germany and China. That's where she lived at the time. So her faith had to grow legs, sea legs, actually. She had to get on a boat to meet this man she'd never met before to see if she was going to marry him, a boat that would take her all the way around the continent of Africa through the Indian Ocean that was full of pirates back in the day to get all the way to China. And that's what she did. God protected her. God provided for her as a young woman all on her own, taking on this long journey. And she met my great-grandfather, and they decided to get married. And there, too, God answered their faith with a beautiful love story that they didn't just say yes to God in the mission work. They said yes to each other, and God blessed them with a beautiful, sweet marriage. Now, they were missionaries in China until the Boxer Revolution, when they were forced to leave the country. And that was very difficult for them, because their heart was for the people in China. But they were sent back to Germany. But again, there too, they lived an infectious life of faith that caught my grandfather's heart on fire, their son. And all his life, he yearned to become a missionary in China. But he grew up at a time in Germany when Germany did not send out any missionaries. He grew up right before World War II. And Germany was sending out people into the world, but for very other reasons than sending out the love of God to the rest of the world. No, he was not recruited to go and become missionary in the world. He was recruited by the German military to fight under Hitler's leadership. And here he was, a man of God who loved God and who loved people and was faced with that choice. And God met him in that choice and said, "I'm not sending you to the people of China. I'm sending you to your own people, the people who are in the trenches, and I want you to carry the light of God to where the people are living like it's hell on earth." And that's what he did. He took up his arms and threw up all his ammunition, just because he never wanted to be tempted to take anyone's life, especially not for the cause of Hitler. And he became a soldier and ministered to his comrades, to the fellow soldiers. And he did that until he was severely wounded on the front lines and spent the rest of the wartime in hospital. But even after the war was over, he ministered to the German people who were deeply hurting in the recovery after the Second World War. And I met people who were pastored by my grandfather during that time. And it was overwhelming to hear their testimony of faith and how their lives were moved by my grandfather's life. Again, a life that was so powerfully filled with faith because my grandfather had said yes to Jesus. Here I am, send me. Even though I really want to go to China, but I'll go wherever you send me. And that is a life of faith that my mother was born into. And if you've ever met my mother, you know that she is a woman of faith, a faith to be reckoned with. She's become a role model for me, molding my faith. Again, a faith that did not start just with my choice to follow Jesus, that did not just start with her choice to follow Jesus, or my grandfather's choice to follow Jesus, or my great-grandfather's choice to follow Jesus. It started over 150 years ago, and even before then. And again, a wake of faith that has influenced my life. And I'm actually fortunate to say that was not only the only part of my story in terms of my heritage of faith. My father actually grew up as a missionary child in Germany too. His family came from America, and they felt the call to become missionaries in Germany around the 1950s. They primarily focused on youth ministry in South Germany, in Bavaria. But here too, these were people who lived a life of faith that was infectious. So much so that their life of faith was not only defined by the mission's activities in youth ministry, but they actually spent their family vacations going to Eastern European countries behind the Iron Curtain to smuggle Bibles to underground churches. That's what they did for their family vacation. They would strip their van and stuff it with Bibles. At one occasion, they even stuffed Bibles down my uncle's casted leg. To bring them to underground churches who had been praying for these Bibles. Again, these are the kind of stories that I grew up with, that were told at family gatherings and around dinner tables, and so on and so forth. So again, my faith has been enriched by my ancestors' willingness to say yes to Jesus. Here I am, send me. Now, I grew up also as a missionary child in Germany. My father was very inspired, and his heart was caught on fire for the people in Eastern Europe. And he continued missions work. He actually smuggled Bibles even when he was a teenager and a young college student. And then eventually, when the Cold War was over and the Iron Curtain was lifted, he was able to legally bring Bibles to Eastern Europe. And he actually did so by also bringing humanitarian aid supplies. So we as a family were stationed in Germany, where he had his warehouses. His organization had the warehouses, and he would leave for Eastern Europe, primarily Romania, multiple times a year. And guess what? That's where he's actually right now, in Romania, serving the people, primarily the gypsy communities, actually this very day. But we as a family primarily lived in Germany lived a missionary life that was slightly different than what you would normally expect, because we were not, again, the ones that would go out and necessarily, you know, I don't know, do whatever you would think mission work would look like. Our mission work, or the mission work that my parents did, was very relational. They wanted to reach out to the people that were in our village where we lived. They wanted us to go to German public school, to German sports clubs, and then bring home our friends so they could meet their parents and do missions work in this way. So I grew up, again, my whole childhood was filled with this emphasis on mission work that I didn't even know was mission work. I didn't know that I was a missionary child until I was a teenager and was introduced as a missionary child to a church here in America. And I was like, really? I'm a missionary child? I didn't even know that. I thought that's just normal life. So again, a faith that was modeled to me, a faith that I didn't necessarily inherit, because you cannot inherit somebody else's faith, but a faith that was lived before me, that showed me that a life of faith is beautiful, is the only life that you would want to live. Now, God challenged me to say, okay, where is your faith? Let's make it your own. And he did that in various ways, but he did it especially when he asked me, what do you want to do with your life after you graduate? Question that we all have to answer at some point, right? And I said, here I am, Lord, send me. And he made it very clear that he gave me a passion for people, and he gave me a passion for horses, and that he wanted me to use those two passions to bring healing into the world. And the only way that I could actually pursue this as a career was to come here to the United States, because I could not study that anywhere in Europe. And that's how I ended up here at Asbury, studying psychology and equine studies. And God made it clear that I needed to go on and continue my studies to actually become a mental health provider. The only school that offered this as a specialization was Prescott College in Arizona. And there you go. There we go, Busy. I know you're somewhere here. That's right. Now, it was an online program that required you to come to campus multiple times throughout the times of your studies. And I asked them, so the times that you were there, you were up there for maybe up to a week. And I asked them, so what, are you going to house me as an online student? They said, oh, no, you got to find your own housing. And I was like, what do students normally do then during this time? And they said, well, I mean, you can stay in a hotel. That's what most people do. Some people also camp on campus. And I was like, neither one of those options will work for me. So it was actually my mom's idea to say to reach out to a church and ask them if they had somebody that could put me up during the times that I would be in Prescott College, in Prescott. And we did, and that is how I met my Arizona grandparents that I never knew I had. Ron and Sue Prevett answered the call. God put it on their hearts to take me in. A dirt poor foreign graduate student who needed a place to stay. They answered the call, and I cannot tell you how much I was blessed through them. They spoiled me every time I was at their house. And I can tell you without a doubt that while I was at Prescott College, I was staying at their house, I was the best fed, best kept, most loved graduate student at Prescott College because of Ron and Sue Prevett. Now, during the time of my graduate studies, I also had to do an internship. And God opened the door for me to do an internship in Covington, Georgia. Now, unfortunately, most internships for graduate students are actually not paid, especially not in mental health. So here I was again, challenged with this decision, should I say yes or not, because I don't have a job. I have to do an internship in graduate studies. I cannot work, but how am I going to stay alive? So again, we reached out to a church in Covington, Georgia, and asked them if anybody would be willing to put me up. And that is when I met my Georgia parents I never knew I had, Becky and John Bailey, who answered the call to take me in, a dirt poor foreign grad school student. And they, again, took me in and loved me as if I was their own daughter. They said yes to God, and they said yes to me. And again, I was the best fed, best kept, most loved intern in Covington, Georgia during the whole year I lived with them. Now, after I graduated, I got my first job. God opened the door for a job in South Georgia. And at this point, I encountered this novel thought of, oh, I can actually pay for an apartment now? And I was like, this doesn't feel right to me. How about I reach out to a church in South Georgia to see if somebody can put me up? I can actually pay the rent this time, but I don't want to live in isolation. I want to live with the people of God. I want to live with my brothers and sisters. And reach out to a church, and that is when I met my brother and sisters, Sarah and Oscar Acosta, from South Georgia that I never knew I had. They took me into their home, into their family, adopted me as one of their own. And to this day, we are blessed with a deeply, deeply rich friendship. We still spent every summer vacation together. Now, I'm already over my time, so apologies. Those of you who have me in my classes know I never end on time. Sorry. But I want to leave you with a couple of challenges. This is my story, and as you can see, there is a theme here. The theme is, here I am, Lord, send me. And this is the challenge I want to leave with you. If you sit here this morning, not knowing what your next step will be, feeling overwhelmed with this huge decision of, where shall I go, Lord? What should I do? Especially after I graduate, there's too many options. I don't know what it is that you want me to do. I want you to pray this very dangerous prayer that says, here I am, Lord, send me. I trust you. I'm willing to let go of my agenda and go wherever you send me. And I guarantee you that when you leave this building today, the life that will unfold before your feet will be so much better than anything that you could create with your own two hands. And it will make any movie and Netflix series pale in comparison when it comes to excitement, romance, and deep, deep satisfaction. So I challenge you to pray that prayer today. And I'm more than willing, happy to meet you down on the bottom here at the rail to pray that prayer with you. Thank you for letting me share this morning.